From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Nora Flaherty with the news on this day in Maine, Friday, August 30th, 2019.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners like you and by the Dempsey Challenge. Run, walk, or bike this September to help the Dempsey Center support those impacted by cancer. DempseyChallenge.org. And Douglas Ridge, a Unity Technologies eco-conservation subdivision in Brunswick, committed to net zero home design. More at douglasridge.com.
Opponents of Central Maine Power's controversial plan to build a new transmission line through Western Maine have quietly submitted language that could lead to a statewide vote on the project.
It appears to basically direct the Public Utilities Commission to declare that this is not in the best interest of the people of Maine.
Secretary of State Matt Dunlap says former Wilton State Senator Tom Saviello is the lead member of a group of opponents seeking approval to circulate petitions on the question. If, after review and possible revision, Dunlap approves the language, the petitioners will need to secure more than 63,000 certified signatures by mid-February to get the question on the ballot in November of 2020. Saviello and CMP officials could not immediately be reached for comment. Governor Janet Mills says she is carefully reviewing the bill that would extend ranked choice voting to presidential primaries and general elections. As Maliri reports, Mills says the bill is more complex than it appears, and there are several key questions she'd like answered before she signs it or vetoes it.
Mills says it's not yet clear how the selection of presidential electors would work under the new measure, which she says also fails to consider the additional cost of either a primary or general election using ranked choice voting. Republicans generally oppose the measure, so if Mills issues a veto, it would likely not survive. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Mal Leary.
And a plan to create a medical tourism facility at a former shoe mill in Auburn's been abandoned. 4 years ago, Chinese investment company Miracle Enterprise announced the project that would cater to Chinese tourists. It was lauded by local officials and Central Maine Medical Center, but Auburn's Director of Economic and Community Development, Michael Chammings, says Miracle Enterprise has scrapped the project in part due to the delayed implementation of the EB-5 visa program, which offers green cards to foreign nationals who invest a certain amount of money in new U.S. businesses.
They were expecting to get other investors involved through the EB-5 program, which we thought was going to be, or they thought was going to be a couple of months, and it kept getting pushed off, and it ended up being a couple years.
The property is currently listed as a package with two other buildings for $5 million. In weather tonight, skies clearing with lows in the 40s and 50s. Tomorrow, a mix of sun and clouds north with a few sprinkles, otherwise mostly sunny, highs in the mid-60s to mid-70s.
This past week on Maine Calling, Monday, puffins in Maine.
It's amazing that a seabird can just float all year long at sea.
Tuesday, state legislature and bond proposals. Wednesday, Maine's famous lighthouses.
They take an incredible beating from winter storms and so forth. It's the biggest challenge in lighthouse preservation.
Thursday, Read Me and Top Authors. And Friday, All About Jazz. Maine Calling, online anytime at mainecalling.org.
Increased tourism, more seasonal employees, and a rise in short-term rentals have all pushed housing prices higher. And as Robbie Feinberg reports, the situation is forcing some year-round residents to find rentals out of town.
Tara Russell drops crab cakes and sausage onto a sizzling grill inside the kitchen of Tailgate Sports and Pizza, a local bar and dinner spot in Bar Harbor.
Is this breakfast champ done yet or no?
It's late summer, and outside the streets are packed with tourists. As a cook, Russell works here year-round, from the busy summer months through the dead of winter. But she says starting 3 or 4 years ago, it's become harder to find a suitable rental for her and her daughter in town.
Especially for a single parent, or really anybody. I was looking for a one or two bedroom, maybe three, here in town. And you could not get anything for under $2,500, $2,400 a month, which is ridiculous.
Russell says she's had to move two or three times each year, from a summer rental to a winter rental, then back again. She says the constant search for housing can be exhausting.
So you really don't get the sense of being at home because you're always moving and changing things, and you really can't get settled and put pictures up and because you know you're leaving in 6 months. So it's frustrating.
It's not like a housing situation. It's a crisis when we start to lose the heart of our community. And I want people to acknowledge it as that. I think that that requires decisive action.
Bar Harbor Town Councilor Gary Friedman says when he built his house in town more than 30 years ago, the neighborhood was bustling with families and kids, but not anymore. A recent study found that from 2011 to 2016, Mount Desert Island lost more than 100 year-round housing units. In fact, the number of seasonal units on the island increased by nearly 10%.
Now, when you walk down the street in December, January, February, it's dark at night. There's no lights on in the houses because they're all seasonal rentals or employee housing.
Friedman and others cite a number of reasons behind these trends. There's the increasing popularity of Acadia National Park and the limited space for development on MDI. Businesses point to the increasing number of seasonal workers, many on visas, in need of housing. Kevin DeVoe, who owns the West Street Cafe, started purchasing buildings to house workers about 5 years ago.
And we realized that if we were going to be housing people who were not going to be living here year-round, it had to be within a reasonable distance from the restaurant, as in walking distance. It's about a mile. And so, yeah, we started buying up some single-family houses, and we bought two and built one. And it's a challenge.
DeVoe now has 16 employees in housing. Other businesses say as many as 200 of their seasonal workers are housed in the same way. But that means there are fewer houses for year-round residents. And the situation has become even more serious due to a rise in short-term vacation rentals advertised through websites like Airbnb. Various measures have estimated between 300 and 1,000 rentals in town, prompting an unsuccessful attempt to place an emergency moratorium on new applications for certain vacation rentals. Many residents say income from those units make it possible for them to afford to live on the island. Town Councilor Erin Koff says she's sympathetic to that perspective, but says the town does need some sort of regulation on short-term rentals as part of a larger housing plan.
I personally know three people. Between the three people, they own 12 different houses that they rent out weekly. You don't necessarily need to be doing that level of what's called vacation rentals. It's not. It's commercial investment lodging.
The housing issue on Mount Desert Island is affecting businesses as well. Large employers such as MDI Hospital and Jackson Laboratory say that affordable housing is one of the most difficult issues their workers face. Jackson Lab COO Catherine Longley says a recent survey showed that only 30% of her company's employees live on the island.
Well, based on our housing study that we did with employees, people would rather prefer to live closer to the lab. So we know that more housing in the area is going to be critical.
The town has floated several proposals to deal with the issue. It now requires vacation rentals to be registered and pay a $250 annual fee. In July, the town council voted down an ordinance that would have allowed worker dormitories. Town councilors expect to take up a modified version of that proposal soon. And some are also pushing for modified zoning rules to allow construction of more housing and for other restrictions on short-term rentals. In mid-September, the town council will convene a workshop to discuss the issue once again and look at other options. But officials say major changes will likely take several months. For local cook Tara Russell, the housing shortage has pushed her and her daughter out of town. After struggling to find any suitable units in Bar Harbor earlier this year, she moved to Southwest Harbor on the other side of Mount Desert Island. She'd still prefer to be in Bar Harbor, but she's happy to have landed a rental house she likes.
I mean, maybe a little bit steep, but you know what? I was just thrilled. I mean, this was like the best thing that could have happened. So it's a beautiful place. Great neighbors. Yeah, I'm happy.
Still, Russell says she hopes that Bar Harbor can find a fix to the situation soon. She worries rental costs could potentially push workers even farther away from their jobs. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Robbie Feinberg.
You may have heard it said that just about every third bite of food you take was made possible by a bee. Bees are required in the production of everything from apples to zucchini, and even important cattle feeds like alfalfa require bees for pollination. To meet this demand over the last 50 years, growers have relied on trucking in thousands of hives of non-native honeybees to pollinate crops like blueberries and cranberries. But with honeybee colonies now facing sudden declines and hive rental costs soaring, there's a renewed focus on establishing habitat for native pollinators. Jennifer Mitchell has more.
It's a steamy summer day on the down east Blueberry Barrens. The sun is just starting to peek through a persistent drizzle, but thousands of little hovering insects are keeping busy on wildflowers.
Look at all the pollen they've collected already on their legs. See that little like yellow puffball? That's where they store it and send it to go back to the hive.
That's Bruce Hall, an agronomist with Wymans of Maine, a leader in the world's wild blueberry industry, and a pioneer in the practice of weaving native bee habitat into its production acreage. It's not the time of year when growers typically get excited over bees. In fact, harvest is just starting. But Hall is thrilled to see that despite the dampness of the morning, native bumblebees are tumbling over the yarrow, asters, and fireweed, and lots of little tiny pollinators are at it as well.
I don't want to get too close with my finger, but you see it? That's a bee. Most people, I mean, they've never even seen that in their lives, right?
It's a tiny, tiny bee.
Yeah, it's really small. I mean, that I don't know how, is that an eighth of an inch long? It's definitely no more than a quarter, that's for sure. Here's another one right here, a different species actually. It's got orange on its thorax. There are all kinds of them coming through here right now, all kinds of them.
It's just one of hundreds of native bee species that have buzzed over the fields for thousands of years. Rather than converting this patch of wildflowers to fruit production, Wymans is allowing it to remain in a tangled mass of weedy glory with some scrubby trees and dead branches brought and dumped nearby to complete the scene.
What's becoming more and more evident is the need for habitat, both food and shelter for bees. A healthy pollen and nectar diet for all species of bees allows for an individual to be more resilient. So whether that's to pathogens or pesticides or anything, This is fantastic pollinator habitat right here. And this happens to be right in the middle of one of our production fields.
Hall estimates that about 25% of the crop in the surrounding area was pollinated for free by native bees. And with literally hundreds of acres dedicated to bees and butterflies, Wymans of Maine is being held up as an example of successful bee conservation by the newly launched New England Pollinator Partnership. But for many smaller growers, the costs of this new approach may be out of reach.
Enhancing or installing pollinator habitat is not cheap and is not easy. And so you really need some quality technical and financial assistance quite often for those things.
That's Tony Jenkins with the Natural Resources Conservation Service, an arm of the USDA and one of the partners in a 25-year agreement that provides federal funds and technical guidance to landowners across New England who might need a little help developing pollinator habitat. And Jenkins says the partnership will also provide some protection from unintended consequences. If, for example, a farmer's conservation efforts result in the attraction of a protected or endangered species, such as the rusty-patched bumblebee, Jenkins says the farmer would be protected by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service from potential negative consequences.
Basically, we're trying to protect them from the old no good deed goes unpunished kind of situation.
But the larger goal of the project is to protect and preserve all of the native bee species that could serve as valuable pollinators.
In Maine, we have 278, more or less, species of native bees, and none of them are honeybees.
Eric Venturini is a conservationist and biologist with the Xerxes Society, which is also involved with the partnership. He says as beloved as the honeybee is and as valuable as it is to agriculture, it can be a little hard to work with in the New England states. For example, honeybees won't fly when it's chilly or drizzly. Native bees, however, will often venture out in less than ideal circumstances. And Venturini says if climate studies are correct, we may need them even more in the future.
Some recent research has found that we're actually experiencing fewer good pollination days in the spring here in Maine, which of course implicates the importance of native pollinators.
The New England Pollinator Partnership says its goal is to reach at least 1,200 landowners to collectively provide at least 7,500 acres of new pollinator habitat. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Jennifer Mitchell.
And that's today's Maine News. For more stories, visit mainepublic.org. Have a great weekend. I'm Nora Flaherty.